let me ask you this. Where do you think that misconception comes from, where, you know, all immigrants are criminals?
Media. Like, some of the leaders, and I don't like to be political or anything, because I do respect every point of view, every political view, because everybody has a reason to be voting for one person or another. But I just think, yes, that there's a lot of misinformation about immigrants coming here to be criminals. Like, we are not criminals. We are hardworking. We try to educate ourselves to be better citizens of this country.
We'll discuss race and how it plays a factor, and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
BEP is on fire. Our audience is growing fast and the impact is real. Now is the time for your brand to grow with us and reach a highly engaged, influential community with real spending power. Don't miss this moment. Email us today at media@tonytidbit.com. Let's make it happen and put you and your brand in front of the people that matter. We are coming to you live from our BEP studio for another thought-provoking episode of A Black Executive Perspective Podcast, a safe space where we discuss all matters related to race, culture, and those uncomfortable topics people tend to avoid. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit.
And I'm your co-host, Chris P. Reed. Before we get started, we always want to remind you to check out our partners at Code M Magazine. Code M Magazine, whose mission is saving the Black family by first saving the Black man. Check them out, CodeMMagazine2Ms.com.
Yep, definitely check them out. Today, we welcome Erica Valdivia, a woman whose journey shatters one of America's most damaging myths that all immigrants are criminals. Erica will share her unfiltered story the headlines will never tell. Her story is marked by sacrifice, grit, and triumph in the face of misinformation and fear. Erica's story is more than a testament to survival. It's a blueprint for transforming obstacles into opportunities.
Let me give a brief understanding of who we have before us. Erica Valdivia migrated from Guadalajara, Mexico, and built a life in the United States fortified in perseverance and hard work. She proudly raised two children while working for 25 years on a horse farm, during which time she earned her GED at the age of 33. Not being satisfied there, she went on to earn a paralegal degree, a real estate license, and notary certification. Today, Erica works as an assistant team lead and realtor with Keller Williams, where she personally manages 13 properties and assists her community with immigration paperwork. Never one to shy away from a challenge, Erica exemplifies how determination and education can open doors and transform lives. Erica Valdivia, welcome to A Black Executive Perspective Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So do me a favor. Tell us a little bit about where you currently reside and a little bit more about your family. What motivates you?
Yes, I live in Palm Beach County in Wellington, Loxahatchee, Florida. And yes, I have lived here for the past 20 years.
And then tell us about your family.
My family. Okay, I'm married. I have two kids. I have a 27-year-old daughter called Bianca. And then my son just turned 21, Enrique. And my husband, Alejandro. And I have a hairy son, my dog, Canelo. And my daughter has I have a grandson. It's also a little dog called Toby.
Wow. Erica, number one, you don't look like you have a 27-year-old. So
thank you.
God is good. And sounds like you have a wonderful family. It's awesome to hear. Like I said, God is good. Question I have for you, my friend, as Chris spoke a little bit about in your bio, you've overcome a lot of things and you're actually working in a lot of areas right now and also raising, you know, a big family. Why did you want to come on a Black Executive Perspective podcast to discuss this topic?
Well, I was told by a coworker about this wonderful podcast, and I think it's a great opportunity for me to share my story because we live in a country with many immigrants. So I'm an immigrant, so I would like to give hope and maybe a different perspective of what is being an immigrant in the U.S.
Well, listen, we're glad you're here to share this story and provide a different perspective for many. So, Erica, are you ready to talk about it, my sister?
Of course, I am ready.
All right, let's talk about it. So, you know, Chris spoke about how you grew up in Guadalajara, Mexico, right? So talk a little bit about that experience growing up there. And then more importantly, what made you want to come here to the United States?
Sure. Well, I am a part of a family of mother, father, and four kids. I am the older sister. I have a sister and two brothers. So I had a very happy childhood. We make the best of what we had. I live in a two-bedroom apartment, one bathroom, with my family, but we were a happy and loved family. Why I came to the U.S.? Because I got married when I was very young. I was 17 years old, actually, when I got married. So my husband wanted to come to the U.S., and then that's the reason we came to the U.S. After I got married, we came for a better opportunity to live and build a family.
I love it. I love it. Tell us a little bit, though, in terms of, you know, like you said, you grew up with your family, small place, meager means, but you guys were happy. Talk about some of the values that your parents instilled in you when you were young that still guide you today.
Yes. Well, my parents always said to me and my siblings that a principal thing in life is respect. Respect others and always be positive, be helpful, be kind to people. So those are the most, the biggest values that I have from my parents. So just be a good person and have respect for everybody. Yes.
Let me ask you a question. Was this something that you and your husband had discussed prior to getting married, or was this dream something, how did you know this dream existed, and was it a dream you shared? Did you have like an idea of the United States, or was it just you're following your husband? Because that's what married people do. I did that for my wife as well.
Yes. Well, actually, before we got married, when I was younger, I actually lived for a year in California with my parents, but we went back to Mexico. And my husband also, before we got married, he was in the U.S. also for about the same time, a year. So he knew, especially when I was here before, I was a kid, so I didn't know exactly what it was, right? But for my husband, he saw the opportunity to have a better job, a better life in the U.S. So
the reason why
So actually, when we got married, that wasn't the plan. It's kind of like we were in Mexico, we got married, and we were there for almost a year, and then we decided. He came first, and then 2 months after that he came, I followed him.
I think that's such an important story, because when I got married, I live in Texas. And I didn't when I was going to get married, I didn't get married here. In fact, we didn't move here until after we were married. But the moral of the story is, it's very few people that live where they grew up. It's more people that get married and their spouse or their love take them to other places. And so yours happened to take you to another country, but mine took me into another state. And in fact, I remember going to a job and I was in the interview. And I was talking to the guy, and he was from Illinois as well. And I said, hey, you know, JT, my wife has already told me I can't go to China because the company did a lot of business in China. We're not moving to China. He was like, oh, don't worry, Chris, don't worry. we're not going to send you to China. And a year later, the division went to China, right? And my wife was like, oh, I thought you told him. But what I'm saying in that is there's opportunities for trying to better yourself, your family, and advance yourself all over the world. It's not just state to state or city to city. And I think that sometimes people get into this mindset that everybody's escaping from something. And that's where this criminal thing comes into effect. Like, everybody's escaping to come here as a safe haven, but some people just do things for opportunity. And so I really appreciate that story of how it started, where, yay, I had my family, we was cool, we loved each other,
we were happy,
I loved my husband, we were happy,
and he said, let's go
make a move.
Yeah,
so that's cool.
That's exactly what it is. We were not escaping from anything. He just wanted to have a better opportunity on his job. And that was the reason. Yes.
So let me ask you this. When you guys first came over, talk about how you entered the U.S., right? Because your story is very compelling. And I don't think a lot of people understand, you know, not just trying to do things the right way, but more importantly, how tough it is to come over here and be legal here in the United States. And I just want to, I want everybody to really understand the process, and more importantly, what you had to deal with, you and your family had to deal with, to come over here and to make a better life.
It's time to rethink your protein. Agrilab's protein bars are crafted with high quality protein, double the leucine, and enriched branched chain amino acids, essential for optimal muscle recovery. Finally, a protein bar that works as hard as you do. So visit agrilabs.com and use the code BEP to get 20% off. That's agrilabs.com, promo code BEP.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we tried to come the right way. We applied for visas, but the visas were denied. Why? Because basically the requirements were almost impossible to acquire. At that time, basically you have to be with a huge bank account, in which we didn't have. We had enough to survive, but nothing crazy. That's why we were coming for a better opportunity.
So hold on, Erica. So because I want to keep this in layman's terms. All right. So when you said you have to have a huge bank account, speak specifically what type of money you had to have. And was that to buy a visa? Was that to talk a little bit about the financial requirements?
Yes, well, basically you needed to prove that you own a house, that you have a successful business, and you were like rich, like have lots of money on the bank, which we didn't have all that. So those were the requirements. So our visas were denied. And so we decided to come walking. And that's how first my husband came, then myself. He was lucky. He tried and then passed at the first time. But for me, it was different. My story was different. So I had to try 4 times in walking through the mountains. Basically, when you do that, you risk your life and your integrity, because you don't know what's going to happen. Because I was 19 years old back then. And so it was hard. It's dangerous. You have to basically walk and sleep on the top of the mountain. You can hear the rattlesnakes. And after all that effort, then you get caught. So immigration detained me and the group of the people that I was coming with. So they basically put you in like a detention center for a few hours. They take your name and then they send you back. They release you in Mexico. So I wasn't successful until the 5th time.
So hold on 1 second, though, just real quick. I just want to back up for a second. So you said your husband came over. He was able to make it through. OK, yes. You guys tried the right way. From a financial standpoint, and it seemed like it was a class system. All right. They were only letting people from a class system who had money come through. Right. But they wasn't. So that was the requirement. It wasn't you had to live in this town or you had to be this. It was more of a financial situation, which was a class. If you had big money, you could come through. Is that what we're hearing?
Correct. Yes.
OK. Let me ask you this. when they turn you down, why didn't you guys just say, you know what? We can just stay here in Guadalajara. Why didn't? What was the reason for you to keep trying to come back or to come to the United States?
A better opportunity, because my husband was working and his pay was okay, but not enough maybe to buy a house to be more successful or have more things. It was okay just to survive, but not to grow a family. That was the reason. Yes.
So it seems like he thought, I have the skill set, I'm willing to work, but I want to get paid something that's going to allow for me to build on my family, build on my legacy through this hard work, right? My question what stood out to me was you said you were a single woman, 19 years old, going through the mountains. When you were denied that first time, that second time, that third time, how many times would you have been denied before you just gave up? What was it going through your mind that said, I'm not going to be denied this opportunity. I'm not going to be denied this. Even if they catch me and send me back, I'm going to, you know, take these steps literally and go back into the mountains and try it all over again.
Harriet Tubman. Right. Okay, yes. The Underground Railroad, right?
Yes. Well, my motivation was that I was already married. But I was on my own with the journey. My husband was already on the U.S. So I have a cousin who was waiting for me in Tijuana. I had that support of a family member, but who was waiting for me, but was not walking with me. So my motivation was that I needed to be with my husband. Because I love my husband and I need to make it through the border. So I was catch and release and then, okay, try again. And by the fourth time, I can tell you my cousin said, do you want to go back to Guadalajara? And I say, no, I can't. And I remember one thing about my cousin that he removed one of his, we are Catholic, so he gave me a special, it's like a charm, Virgin Mary, Guadalupe, and then he's like, you know, my mom gave me this for protection. After all you have tried, you deserve to have this because I know it's going to happen for you. So after he gave me that, then that's when I was successful going to the other side. So, yeah, that was my motivation, my faith, too, because I believe with God, without God, we are nothing. So that was a big motivation, and my faith kept me going. Yes.
So how many miles, put us here in this journey, how many miles into the mountain by yourself do you feel like you had to travel in order to make it? And was it luck or did you change your system to fit the situation?
I don't remember exactly how many miles. I can tell you I remember how much I walk. I walk for hours. We got there maybe 7 p.m. at night and we walk all night until maybe 5 in the morning. We stayed there for like 2 hours at the top of the mountain and waiting for instructions for when the car was going to pick us up. So we got in the car. It was actually two cars because it was about 13, 15 people. So it was like two cars. So we were not successful. And then, okay, try again. So until we made it. Yeah, but it was hours. I cannot remember how many miles. I just remember the hours from 7 to 5 in the morning walking and just like going up the hill and down the hill. Like people sometimes, it's hard because you fell. After you made it, you are like all dirty because, yes, you fell. You're on the moite. Like, yeah, I look like I remember... One time when I was sent back, I looked like a homeless person because I was all dirty because I fell. I had an accident. So yeah, it's hard. It's a lot of work what we have to do to cross the border.
So let me ask you this. So you finally got here, right? Yeah. To Chris's point, you didn't give up. You endured a lot, four times, which you could have died or, you know, bit by a rattlesnake or whatever the case may be. Now you get here, you reunite with your husband, but now you're here illegally. Okay. Were you afraid of, you know, somebody finding out? What did you guys do when you got here and you wasn't here legal? Tell me a little bit about that process. What were you thinking? Or you didn't care about it. What were you looking to do once you got here? Talk a little bit about that.
Well, all we did was working. By the time my husband already had a job. So we were just working and we were just trying to be kind of like invisible, not to cause any problems. So we don't get in trouble with immigration or with the police, especially me. I was like a little traumatized because of the experience. So I thought they were like looking at me and they were going to catch me again and send me back.
That's my point. Yeah.
Yes. So yes, it's really hard for a few years. So we stayed without documents for about, when we were granted the green card, I believe it was about 9 years after we came.
9 years?
Yes. So thankfully, God put in our way the person that we work for, our boss, he and they help us to get the legal status. So basically, the job that my husband was doing was with horses. He was training horses and grooming horses. So I started working with that same job. And then they helped us out. They said it was time for us to have a better life and a better way, because even we couldn't get any health insurance. So my daughter will get sick and no health insurance. So it was so hard. So they helped us through. My boss and he hired an attorney. So we got a work permit, but we could not travel outside the U.S. And then we were like that for 4 years until we got the permanent residence where we were able to travel. And then after 5 years, having the permanent residence card, we apply for citizenship. So we became U.S. citizens. But
let me ask,
it was a long journey. Was a long journey, pricey, which we were lucky. We worked hard, and our boss paid for all that. So he helped us out. So
let me ask you this. The boss that you had, was this an American white guy?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Okay, so you had an ally. Basically, you had an ally that was willing to respect that you were trying to work hard, trying to do it the right way, and was willing to invest not only time, but obviously some advice and kind of guided you guys or helped guide you to where you could do things and get yourself to where you weren't looking over your shoulders and feeling like at any point in time they can send you back, like you say, get in the car and send you back. Well, that's cool, because I think that that's not something that's really highlighted, is the amount of advocacy or the allies that are required to make some of these stories as good as they are, because some people abuse those situations and hold it over their people. Go ahead, Tony.
Right. And to that point, when your husband got the job and you got, did they ask for any papers? Did they say, hey, are you a citizen? What's your social security number? Did you have to go through all that? Or they just said, hey, we like you, we're going to hire you?
Yes. Well, my husband was supposed to be working only for 2 weeks. They hired him for 2 weeks, but, the boss, it was, Barbie, that was the first boss, and Mr. Gamber, they hired him only for 2 weeks, but they like his job, so they offered him to stay. But they knew, my husband didn't speak any English, So he had somebody helping him to translate, a friend of him. So she helped to translate, and the boss just said, oh, we like this this person, how he does his job. Ask if he wants to stay. So he said yes. And then that's how he's, but they knew he didn't have any papers. And they, until they figured out a way to help us out, but actually the first time we were not married then, when he was working there. And then he went back eventually to Mexico, and that's when we got married, and then we came. So when he was back and he called again, they gave him the job back. And we had our daughter, she got sick, and that kind of opened the opportunity, because my daughter didn't have any health insurance, to help us out. So yes, we were blessed by them willing to help us out. But we work, I feel like we did our best, my husband and I working, and then they apply, they went through the process, they signed, they were basically like the sponsor, like, yeah, they were the sponsors, and that's how everything happened.
Let me ask you this. So did your husband tell them that you were trying to come over once he went back? Did they tell the boss that you were trying to come over and then that you got detained four times? Did they provide any assistance to help you come over, or you were just on your own?
No, they didn't know.
They didn't know.
Yeah, they didn't know. They just knew when we were here, and that's it. And then when my husband, actually when he came back, he went to somebody else for a small period of time, like a few months. But when I got here, and we were traveling between Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Wellington, Florida. So when he got back in Florida, he requested, he went and see the previous boss and asked for the job. So they asked him to, he said, I'm married now. So they say, okay, bring your wife. So we would like to meet her. And then we went, and then they said yes, and they provided housing for us. They provided a car. My husband had a driver's license, so he was able to drive. And then after, that's when they applied for us to be legally in the country. Yes.
Let me ask a question that's fascinating me. You talked about when you were younger, you came to California and then you went back. You talked about your husband coming and going back. Every time that you come back, do you have to go through this mountain path type of ritual? Or really? So even when you were a small kid with your mom and dad? So why do people go back? Why do you go back?
I don't know.
Okay.
Buddy, I told you. Harriet Tubman went back.
I know. All right, she was crazy, though.
She was bringing people with her.
Yeah, she was.
Once you figure out the path, okay, you're like, hey. Now, sometimes you get caught, but you don't at least have the path.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, back on those days wasn't easy, but what I see nowadays is a lot harder to come. So back in that time, yes, it was difficult because you had to walk, you had to risk your life, yes, but maybe somehow it was a little easier.
Let's do this. So obviously we're in a period where, you know, there's people who's listening to this, who watch this, and will be like, well, they came over here illegally and they shouldn't have did that. And they should have came through the right way. If they would have came through the right way, everything would have been okay, but they didn't. And yeah, it worked out for them, but there's a ton of people, they shouldn't do this and this and that. So let me ask you, and then back to what we said earlier, they're all criminals. So while you guys were traveling from Pittsburgh to Florida and then in California, right? Were you guys robbing banks along the way? Were you, you know, was any criminal activity going on? Talk a little bit. I mean, I'm being facetious, but because we know that that's a narrative that's being pushed out to scare people and provide fear, and it's a lot of misinformation. So speak a little bit about that. Talk to the person who's like, you guys or people who are trying to come here illegally, they shouldn't do it. They only should come through the front door, regardless of their circumstances or their situation. They still should just come through the front door.
Yes. Well, no, we were not definitely robbing banks, like I said before. We were trying to be invisible, to do what we came from. It's like we came here because we wanted a better life. We wanted to be good citizens. We pay taxes, even we didn't have to, but we did it. We pay taxes because that was the right thing to do. We were grateful that we had the opportunity to be in the U.S. And it's just that, yes, we should come the right way. We try, but we couldn't. So I'm not saying it's okay to come that way, but I can tell you, we came and we work ourselves. We did everything that we had to be a good citizen. We work hard. We never expected anything for free. We got nothing for free. So we work ourselves off. We were lucky to have a good boss, and they provided us with stuff we needed, but we were working for them. And we just tried to be, like I said, good citizens, good people, and work as much as we can. I can tell you, with the job that my husband has, he was traveling all the time. So basically, I raised my kids half of the year by my own. Yes, he was traveling, he was working, but at the same time, I worked in the farm. So I was working with the horses, I was working at the office, and I was raising my kids. So it's hard. Yes, I was marrying, but my husband was away for 6 months. So I was on my own. If my kids got sick, I had to go to the hospital on my own with my kids. And so it's just that, yes, the right thing to do is do it the right way. In my case, we were not escaping from any bad situation. But there's a lot of people who come because they're escaping something. And I believe we should work hard. And earn the things that we need to survive in here, because this is the country of the opportunities. So just take the opportunities, but at the same time, do not expect to get everything for free. I do agree with that. And I'm not political. I'm not saying one is better than the other one. I'm just saying that that's up to the person to have a better life and to behave, because as an immigrants, we have to respect, yes, we do have to respect the laws, but if for some reason, maybe we don't understand the law, or when we do, we just have to make it better. And I just feel that there should be something to prove that you are a good citizen and to have a path to be here legally. Because I can tell you, the majority of the people, we just come here for a better life, to work hard. And that's all. We are not here, the majority of us, to cause any trouble. So
let me ask you a question, because you got to a point in your life where you really put an emphasis on educating yourself and yes, going to school and learning and understanding the laws. And once again, there are people that did do it the right way that still have the fear of, you know, you have a 21-year-old son. There's a fear that somebody's just going to grab him at this point.
I mean, right, you know, correct.
That's what I see.
Correct.
That's what I see.
Correct. It doesn't matter.
So it doesn't matter. So in the idea of whether you did it the right way to start off with or you did it the right way to end up, I would be more pissed if I did it the right way to start off with, get the all the paperwork together, and then they just deported me or flew me to a country that wasn't even mine. You know, can you imagine just being flown to Peru and dropped off and you're Mexican? Right? So
yes.
So in the idea of I think that sometimes we can get caught up in the right way and the this way and the that way. But I can honestly tell you, based off what I hear, it's not as much concern about if it was done right, bad, wrong, or indifferent. How do you feel about being targeted just because of your nationality, just because of being a Latina?
Right. And can I just add to that? And just to be clear here, are you more afraid today, even though you have, you're a citizen today, to Chris's point? And talk about your friends and family and your community. Yeah, yeah. Talk about how they feel, even though they may be citizens.
Yes. To be honest, yes. Recently, my husband had to go here in Florida, about 4 hours away for work. So I told him, you need to carry your passport, so in case you get stopped, you can prove that you are here legally. For me, that's the same. In Florida, you don't have a driver's license if you are not legally in the state. So that's proof that you are here. But still, I have seen and I have heard stories from people that they get stopped just based on their skin color, just because they look Hispanic. And I think that's really wrong, because you cannot assume somebody is here legally or illegally just based on skin color or on a race. So yes, it is, sometimes it is scary to be at some places or say, like for example, my son, he was born here in Florida, right? So he's an American citizen by birth. And, but he also acknowledges his background, his culture, which is Mexican. So he will wear the Mexican jersey. And at some point, I was like, be careful when you go out, because maybe if you are wearing your jersey, just be careful where you go, because he's at college. He's in Orlando studying. By the way, he's studying engineering, aerospatial engineering. So I'm so proud. Sorry, I had to say
that. You know, I love it. You should be proud. That's awesome.
Yes. And, but he wears his jersey, and I just told him, if you go out, just be careful where you go, because just by saying I'm Mexican, you can have a problem for that. Maybe be detained or something. You never know. And then he's like, no, mom, I don't go and cause trouble. He's busy with studying. But still, I had to tell him that, because you never know.
If you like what you hear and want to join us on this journey of making uncomfortable conversations comfortable, please subscribe to a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hit subscribe now to stay connected for more episodes that challenge, inspire, and lead the change.
No, you're right. 100% right. Go ahead, Chris.
And I hear that from my friends too.
Yeah. The toughest part about what you're saying is you have taken it upon yourself to educate yourself and understand and respect the laws of the land. So you went through school. You've got your paralegal understanding. You work with your community. You help them fill out their paperwork. But even in the knowledge of the things that you have that are supposed to keep you safe, keep you secure, you still live with fear, even though you know you did the things the right way. You got on the right side of this. You took care of things. You had enough money to buy a house. You know, whatever the stipulations were, you did your work and you were a good person. And you put yourself in a situation where you slept on that mountain so your son could go get an aerospace engineering degree.
Correct.
But you still daily are worried about your husband traveling and making sure he got this. Like, how do you navigate that world of knowing, but it doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter because you're not in the club. Okay. You've done everything. You've checked every box. Okay. You came here, worked hard, the whole nine yards. Like Chris said, you got your education. You still, I mean, and you're doing all the right things. But at the end of the day, people can just look at you and like, you ain't in the club and treat you a certain way. Speak to that a little bit, Erica.
Yes, that is correct. And like I said, my husband and I work hard so my kids can have an education. Like my son is in college. He's on his second year. My daughter already graduated from college as well. She got a degree on marketing, business administration. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And she's a good citizen too. And that's what I said to them, because what we see is just like crazy. It's like so sad and unfair that I do agree that people who do bad things need to be removed if they're not from this country, because you're supposed to be here and respect, right? Respect and don't cause any trouble. But good people, I just don't get how they can go and grab people when they're working on construction, when they're on Home Depot, like they're working, like at the fields. They're picking up the fruit at the restaurants. I just don't get that because these people who are just working. They're right. Not in any trouble. They're not outside robbing a bank or getting in a fight or I don't know. I just feel that it's...
Let me ask you this. Where do you think that misconception comes from where, you know, all immigrants are criminals?
Media. Like some of the leaders, and I don't like to be political or anything because I do respect every point of view, every political view, because everybody has a reason to be voting for one person or another. But I just think... Yes, that there's a lot of misinformation about immigrants coming here to be criminals. Like, we are not criminals. We are hardworking. We try to educate ourselves to be better citizens of this country.
Right,
let me ask
right.
You this. Let mm-hmm. me ask you this. How do you feel about the term? Tony and I talk about this, how... when you hear the term diverse or diversity, you automatically think black people, right? like we own the term diversity. How do you feel about when they talk about rounding up immigrants or the immigration problem? And an immigrant is somebody that's not natively from that land. That's just the definition of the term. But when you see it on TV and the media, it's always like...
It's brown people, black and brown people.
It's always brown people. But there's immigrants from all over
the world. All over the world.
Every country.
Right.
How do you feel like you're
Scandinavia?
You guys have inherited. Yeah, you guys have inherited the term immigrant.
South Africa
as a culture, as a heritage. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's hard because, for example, for Hispanics, so they kind of think everybody's Mexican, right?
Yep.
So it's like, okay, we need to catch them and send them back to Mexico. But maybe there's a person who is, like you said, from Peru, from Colombia, from any other country, which is the same as valuable as Mexico, like everybody. But how you're going to send somebody to a country that is not theirs, so they don't know anybody. And yes, like there's people from all over the world. So, but it's what I have seen. Is the target is just in Hispanics,
right. Exactly. And here's the thing with that is because you're basically saying those countries, right? Mexico, Colombia, they're horrible countries anyway, right? So we don't want none of their people unless they're making big money. Okay. And so that's basically what you're saying. You're saying that everybody that comes from these countries that look like this, they're this, they're all that, right? And we know that's not true, but at the end of the day, that's the narrative. So let me ask you this. How are you and your husband and your friends and your family, how are you guys pushing back against that narrative?
Well, I feel like when we, like, for example, when our work environment, like the office where I work as a realtor and a system team leader, this is a very diverse office. We have people, realtors from all over the world, Europe, South America, the islands, everywhere. So we all respect each other's culture, of course, American people. So I feel like when people really got to know you, they know you're not a bad person. So I had a colleague, a realtor friend here at the office about 2 months ago, who came back from vacation from Mexico. And he was showing me like all the beautiful pictures that he took. And he's like, Mexico is beautiful. I want to move there. It's like, it's not what they show on the news, because always the media is showing the worst. No, we are not the worst. Mexico, I can speak for my country because I know my country. It's a beautiful country full of culture, welcomes everybody too. And there's a lot to see and beautiful things too. And somehow people sometimes don't. I hear something on the news a few weeks ago about a detention facility where they don't have AC or it was very bad conditions, and I hear a comment of a person that I don't want to mention, but he said, oh, but that's okay, in their country they don't have this, like, right. Yes, we do have air conditioner, right. We do have decent houses too, so it's kind of like it's just like a misconception, misinformation.
But that's on purpose, though. Okay, yes. So that's all on purpose, because if you want to degrade someone and you want mainstream to listen to a narrative, you're not going to show beautiful places. You're going to show all the areas that there's trouble. You're going to show negative things, right? And you're going to label this is the whole country. And this is something that's been going on for centuries, right? And so that all those things are on purpose. Okay. I lived in Hawaii. Okay. When you think of Hawaii, what do you think of? It's a paradise. No, there's places on Hawaii you don't want to be caught up at 11 o'clock at night. All right. They don't show that. All right. They only show that when you're talking about people of color areas or countries that have a lot of people of color. Then this is dangerous, or this is this, or this is that. You can get shot in Des Moines, Iowa. You can get beat up in Montana. There's gangs all over the place, almost every city or every rural area here in the United States. But you don't hear that, because that's not the narrative that they want to push out. So that's the issue and I'm glad you came on to talk about these things, right? Let me ask you this, though. How can more allies support immigrants more effectively today? And what I'm talking about, and we're using this word immigrant to Chris's point, you know, just support people like yourself, that they're not, these are people, everybody's not criminals. There's a ton of people doing the right thing on a daily basis, just like every other citizen, or the majority of citizens, because every element, every race or every group, there's a group that's not doing the right thing. That's everywhere. That's everybody, right? But how can people be more supportive of this issue? How can allies be more supportive of this issue?
I will say, just to open their minds and get the opportunity to know us. If you have somebody that is an immigrant, as a neighbor, as a co-worker, just get to know them and then see their actions. Like, we don't have to speak. We just have to, like, we can always say a lot of things, but actions speak louder than words. So just get to know. And like you said, yes, there's obviously in Mexico or any other country, there's areas that are not nice and there's people that are not doing the right thing. Absolutely. But the majority, like everybody, like everywhere else, is good people. So it's just like open their minds and their hearts to know before judging a person, just by why they hear or what they other people say. Just get to know people. That's what I will.
That was very valuable. earlier, and I just want to make sure I reiterate it because it's really stuck with me. And you said that you weren't running from something, you were running to something as it related to prosperity for your family. But you also said that you think Guadalajara is beautiful and that you loved where you were from and you happen to live somewhere else now. And it resonated with me because I love Illinois. Tony loves Michigan. And a lot of people say, if you love it so much, why did you leave? Why did they come here? If they love it so much and it's so beautiful and all of that, if it's all that, why didn't they stay? Well, shit, yes. Illinois is all that, but I moved to Texas. You know, Michigan is all that. But
that's an excellent, like, buddy. That's an excellent point. That's people move from Colorado to Florida, and they're like, oh, I love Colorado. Why didn't you stay there? Who told you to move to Florida? You should have stayed. It's so true. Absolutely. So true.
They use that against the immigrants so much.
Outside of the country.
Love it so
exactly.
Much over there. Yeah.
Why, they love it so much. Why didn't you stay? Wait a minute. You love California, but then you moved to Detroit. What's the issue with that? That's an excellent point. Excellent point.
Yes. No, that's absolutely right. And you know, I have heard that at least three times that somebody actually told me that. And yes, I love where I came from. First of all, I feel like when we forget from where we come from, we lost. We have to be proud of who we are, and that's, I am so proud of who I am, where I come from, and I love Guadalajara. I go visit, and I enjoy myself there. It's my family is there. My roots are there. Why I came here? For a better opportunity. Because at the time, I didn't have that opportunity. We didn't have it. So we were looking for something bigger to grow our family. So that's the reason. But that doesn't mean that we don't like the place where we were born. Absolutely. I love it. Yes. And then I never forget, like I say, where I come from. And I can tell you, I am a proud Mexican American, because Mexico is the one that where I was born, that shaped me, that my parents are from there, and that's my culture. And I love the U.S. because it gave me the opportunities to have what I have wished for. And I have my kids. I learned here. I got my real estate license, my notary, my paralegal degree in the U.S. So I'm forever grateful. I cannot say anything ever in my life wrong about the U.S. because it's like my heart is two. It's Mexico, it's the U.S. So I am grateful for my country where I was born and my country where I live now. So,
well, listen, I'm going to tell you this. We're grateful that you came on, Erica. You've been fantastic to share. More importantly, it shows what type of person that you are, your husband as well, what type of character you have. You could just stay home. You didn't have to come on here to share this story, right? But obviously, you want to be able to educate more people on what the reality is and not what's the misinformation that's being pushed out. So I can tell you flat out, we love you a lot. We're so happy that you think about it. You have two kids in college. You have one kid that graduate college. You have another kid that's in college. You worked your butt off. You continue your education. You didn't sit back on your hands, as a lot of people have. And so this is not, you're not an anomaly here, to be fair. So we want to make sure that too. Oh, okay, one out of 1,000, I can see that. No. There's a ton of people who are doing or have done the exact same thing that you're doing. And to be fair, I moved from, Michigan to Connecticut because we wanted a better opportunity. We were looking for a better life. People do it all the time. A husband, spouse, girlfriend. You know how many people I chat with? What brought you out here? A boyfriend or a girlfriend or a husband or a wife or happens all the time. But more importantly, we're glad that you happened with us today on a Black Executive Perspective podcast. Let me ask you this. How can a Black Executive podcast help you?
Oh, thank you. Well, if you know anybody who's looking to buy or sell a house in Florida in Palm Beach County, I'm here for them.
That's what's up.
You know, that's right. Get right down to it, right?
That's right.
You know, we trying to sell this house. Can we get some pictures up on the website to show you our 3-bedroom bathroom, blah, blah, blah? Absolutely, my friend.
Oh, yes. And also, I just want for the people that hear this, it will be nice that, like I said before, they have the opportunity to know better their neighbors, their coworkers, get the opportunity to know them before judging anybody. And also very important, I got my real estate and my degrees when I was already an adult with kids. And it's very important not to be scared of starting over, because I had my job, the same job, for 25 years. So I had to start something new because I didn't have that job anymore at the farm. So yes, life can change in a blink, and then just never think you're too old to learn something new. I think we are old when we don't have any goals or any challenges in life. So that if somebody can get something out of this, I will be, if only one person gets it, that will be nice. But thank you so much for the opportunity, for having me, for to share my story.
Well, thank you, my sister. And we want God to be with you. And whatever we can do to help you, please don't hesitate to let us know. But more importantly, you helped a lot of people today. So we just want to thank you for coming on a Black Executive Perspective podcast.
Thank you so much, Tony and Chris. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. So I think it's now time for
Tony's Tidbit.
And so the tidbit today, I crossed mountains to find opportunity, but the steepest climb was believing I belong. Because immigrants don't just chase dreams, we build them brick by brick through sacrifice, resilience, and an unshakable will to create a better future. And you heard verbatim a lot of that from our sister, Erica Valdivia.
So at this time, we want to make sure to remind you to tune in weekly to Need to Know with Nasinga. This is where Dr. Nasinga Burton provides timely insights and optimistic and aggressive tones to what we have going on in society. It's super educational, super informative, and you definitely don't want to miss these things that shape our world by Dr. Nasinga Burton each week on a Black Executive Perspective podcast.
Absolutely. And don't miss the next Pull Up Speak Up. One just came out the other day. It was fantastic. Don't forget our roundtable, right? That tackles the most provocative issues, unfiltered voices, sharp perspectives, real talk, a call to action. Join the revolution. Tune in to Pull Up Speak Up here on a Black Executive Perspective podcast.
We also want to always remind you to incorporate LESS. Our goal is to eliminate all forms of discrimination, and to achieve this, we're asking you to embrace less, LESS. You know, the L stands for educate yourself on racial and cultural nuances. One thing that Erica said today was that she educated herself on the nuances of her coworkers because they're from different places, have different heritages, and it helps her to understand them better as she works alongside them to build better lives for themselves and their families.
Absolutely. And then after you learn, you have the letter E, which stands for empathy. Now, since you've learned about different people and nuances and racial cultures, now you should be more empathetic because you can put yourself in their shoes.
And then the first S stands for share. Share your insights, enlighten others. Don't hide it, divide it. You never know when someone could use that information and they just may not know. And so be that beacon of information to them.
Absolutely. And the final S stands for stop. You want to stop discrimination as it walks in your path. So if Aunt Jenny or Uncle Joe says something inappropriate at the Sunday dinner table, or as Erica talked about, somebody says something inappropriate at work in the conference room, you say, Aunt Jenny, Uncle Joe, or Tanya, or Joanne, We don't believe that. We don't say that. And you stop it right there. So if everyone can incorporate less, L-E-S-S, we'll build a more fair, more understanding world. And we all will see the change that we want to see, because less will become more.
We want to make sure that you check out previous episodes. Tune into future episodes as we battle disinformation, like Erica said. We battle disinformation wherever we go. We'll go to our website, sign up for the newsletter. Make sure that you review, give us topics that you'd like to speak about. If you want to come on BEP and speak about something that you're passionate about, let us know. Subscribe. And where can they find us, Tony?
Buddy, you can find a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please follow us on our social channels of X, YouTube, LinkedIn, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at A Black Exec. For our fabulous guests, Erica Valdivia. For the co-host with the most, my boy down in Dallas, Chris P. Reed. I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it today. We definitely learned about it today. We're going to keep striving and thriving about it. We love you so much. And guess what? We're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.